Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jasa Sagonige, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. Folks, the scriptures say my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Blog Talk Radio. This is Yasa Sago, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the Islands of the Sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tehiju Toigu, which means hello, cousins. I'm fine. How are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Anitiwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
We're with, well, Bluewater, our co-host, and this is Mary Sutherland, your host for the Beautiful Prophecy Keepers Show, and with our guest tonight of Dr. Clifford Alford. And do you want us to call you Dr. Alford, or do you want to be called Clifford, or
Clifford?
Okay, well, hi, Clifford. Would you like to introduce yourself to our audience tonight, please? Tell them a little bit about yourself.
My English name is Clifford Alford. My true name with the Medicine Society is Sinawitak, which means the strange man, which is one that I have a lot of fun with. I'm a member of the Asaga Siddhahatmark. The Asaga were founded around 65,000 years ago in a place known as Sargon. People call it Atlantis today. It is underneath the Caribbean and the Atlantic Ocean at this time. And our society was begun by a group known as the Siddhahatmark, which began 69,000 years ago in Peru. And then they then spread over into our area and taught our people as well as to the west, where they toss some people in an agency known as Sekhon. The Asagai are a dual regency, which means that we have a man who runs everything outside the order and a woman who runs everything inside the order. It's an equal thing. It's what we call a matriarchal culture, and as compared to the patriarchal culture that we see in most of society in the world today, which is unbalanced, where men rule and women are subservient, then in the Asagai, men and women are equal. So we have a little bit different way of doing things than other people. In our process of things, we train a number of people to be what are known as Atawehi. And Atawehi is essentially an Asagai Cherokee word that means spiritual leader or holy person, and it can be either a man or a woman. And we do a lot of different things, like we work with the spirits to solve people's problems and to help them with their daily lives. We do a lot of the things that are generally termed to be shamanic nowadays, which is why in our front organization, which is Naturopathic Shamanic Services Incorporated, we have the word shamanic, because a lot of people understand what that means, but they don't understand what Atawehi means.
And what is your URL? For your website?
It's www.nassinc.org.
Okay. Just for the listeners, in case they want to follow along with, by looking at your website as you're talking. So go on. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Anyway, what we do is we have a lot of people that work as medicine people who basically work with herbs and stones and feathers to bring about people's healing. Also do different types of body work for the spiritual side of it. We believe that virtually every problem that anyone has, whether it's considered a physical problem or an emotional problem, or a combination thereof, has a spiritual problem behind it. So we deal with the spiritual things first, and then we deal with the emotional and physical. Then we also have people who do divination, others who work with people to find things that are lost, and then people who just strictly do the spiritual side of things, do rituals for people and things of that nature. And all of that together makes up what's known as an Atawehi, because an Atawehi does all of that.
Fascinating.
It's been fun.
Uh-huh. Now, you have an article in here, "We All Began as One."
Right.
Would you like to tell our listeners about this article? Because I noticed that you use Mu in there.
Right. Well, Mu is the original motherland. It's where...
Because, see, I do... I do research on the continent of Mu and the cultures of Mu. So I was extremely attracted to that. So go on.
Well, Mu, as we know it, as far as the medicine work, spiritual work that began there, was started around 104,000 years ago. And as they went through their spiritual processes, then eventually there came a time as they began expanding out. Let's say you've heard the term Mayan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a Mayan is a missionary, as in someone who set up a colony from someplace out of Mu. So the Mayans, for instance, in around Chiapas and Yucatan and all, were actually originally from Mu.
Okay.
That's what the term means. And so...
So Mayan actually means missionary?
Yes.
Of Mu?
Yes. What it was is that they would send people out to share the spiritual wisdom that they had gained with other people. Not so much trying to convert them to a religion or anything like that, as a missionary is known today, but as someone who would go and share the things that they'd learned as far as their spiritual wisdom that people could then... use in a good way within their own culture and tribe.
Now, is this where the legends come from of a white man in a white robe, bearded?
No, that came about, that started around 2,500 years ago. And we knew that individual as the Sikoma. He he landed first in Peru. The floods had already taken place that had covered up Mu and later covered up Sadigan. And he wound up moving through what we know as Central America now, and up through a good part of this country, wound up over, as far as the Salagi, the Cherokee are concerned, over around what's now the line of Georgia. And there was a village there that was on the north end of a small but very deep lake. It was, you could go out about 10 feet, and it was about 100 feet deep. Rather interesting place. And it was still there today. And the this man came walking into the village as a tornado was coming. And this tornado was just about ready to come across this little lake, which was going to blow this village away. People were running around trying to find their friends and loved ones so that they could at least be together and try to survive this thing. And this stranger came walking in, and he wouldn't, you know, he kept trying to get people to calm down, and they were jostling and stuff, and he needed some area to work, so he went to the only place he could, which meant he walked out on the water. Now, that got everybody's attention enough that it's part of recorded Salagi history to this day. And they stopped, and he started talking to the storm, and the tornado picked up and went over the lake and over the village and started running up the mountain on the other side and didn't harm anyone. And so they asked him, who are you? What do we call you? And he said, call me anything you like. And so they called him the Sikoma, meaning the Lord of Wind and Water. And he was around our people for a number of years, working with our people as well as other tribes in the area. And after he left, we had peace with our neighbors for 300 years.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, so he arrived, what, about 25,000 years ago, you said?
Around 2,500 years ago.
2,500 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was, and then prior to, but, see, prior to him, though, there was that other, the man, Mayan, a missionary,
right.
the missionaries of Mu.
Right, they were around for a long time, yeah.
And I don't think that many people have even heard of them. I have because of my research of Mu, but maybe we can go back into that a little bit more.
Well, as things developed with Mu and they began sending people out, then they started the organization as we know it today that's known as the Siddha Mark, which is currently headed by a man named Jorge Delgado, who lives in Peru still. And that organization then began sending people out to teach and had sent folks into Sarcon first, which is a regency that was north of Mu, that was bordered on the south by what's now Easter Island and on the north by what's now the Hawaiian Islands. And then people over into Sardegan, which, you know, Plato called Atlantis, and we kind of got stuck with that name. Interesting thing as far as names goes, because there was a British archaeologist who was running around in the Hawaiian Islands just before World War I, who figured out that there was someone there before the Kahunas, and so he named it after himself. His name was Charles Lemuria. Good English.
Oh.
His name on something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that's where we get we come up with Lemuria.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, this stuff kind of pops up and sticks, and so
did he perchance to discover the lemur?
Well, I have no idea. He was another white man who thought he discovered something where people already were.
Okay, so what was it originally called then?
Well, it was called Sarcon.
Sarcon.
And
so, okay, so that's where we're, that, which would naturally hurt all of us researchers when we're trying to go way back into the past, because we go back as far as Lemuria, or Lemurian, and we should be looking for Sarcon. How do you spell that? Do you know?
Well, in English we spell it S-A-R-K-Y-O-N, but it's pronounced Sarcon.
Sarcon. S-A-R-K-O-N?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. It's kind of interesting because, remember, we have Sumerian goes, there was a leader or a warrior by the name of Sargon, S-A-R-G-O-N.
Well, it's rather interesting that you bring that up, because some rather interesting little coincidences, if you will, take place if you study linguistics, in that the ancient language of the Kahunas, which dates back to the time of Sargon, if you compare that to some of the Asagai dialect in Salagi, and you compare it to the language of the Berbers in the North Atlas Mountains in Africa, most of the words are the same.
Yeah.
So, and that kind of gets us back to what we were talking about, in that the Siddha Hamar is sending out their own missionaries to move, went all over the place, because there was a problem that took place in Sargon. There was a prince by the name of Sitanakit. You may find that name a little interesting compared to some things in some of the religions today, in that Sitanakit started what was known as the initiations of evil. And to us, that means anything that involves either an animal or a human sacrifice. And it started first with animal sacrifices, for the power that it gave and all the fear and the stuff that got instilled in the animal, and then they would eat it afterwards. Drink its blood and eat its flesh.
And what was this name?
Well, we called it the Initiations of Evil.
Uh-huh.
His name is Sitanakit, Prince Sitanakit.
S-A, do you know how to spell that one?
Yes, S-A-T-A.
S-A-T-A.
N-A.
N-A. N-A-K-U. Okay.
And so, Sitanakit then got into human sacrifices, and he started sending out people to infiltrate all of the other places and share his teachings also. So the Siddha, in conjunction with the Asagai, then sent out people all over the place to put them in isolated communities just to preserve the ancient teachings in case there became more of a problem with this than was foreseen. As in,
which, of course, it did.
Well, yeah, it did, absolutely. You know, the Mayans got fully into it. The Inca did later on. The Aztecs were heavily into it.
This would be your human sacrifices.
Right.
And blood cult.
Right. And, you know, even today, as you go out among the Mayans, they do things like, kill a living chicken, and, it's not living after they kill it, of course, but take its blood and stuff, and rip it open and do their divination work with it.
So
it's still continuing there.
So you've seen that with the early Hebrews, Israelites, etc.?
Yeah, they did it too. So it was, it was very pervasive. It got all over the world. But there were a lot of places where the Asagai remained fairly isolated and were able to maintain their teachings. So now they're pretty much spread all over the world. You found some of them went to what's now Great Britain and were known as the Picts.
Uh-huh.
And others went to what's now the Great Smoky Mountains of North Carolina, and became the Cherokee later on with some other groups that came in. And another group went up into what's now Wisconsin, and they, when another group came in later on, became the Oneida.
Uh-huh. That's where I'm at now, it's Wisconsin.
Okay. And then there's another group up in Nova Scotia, known as Anishinaabe. So they're kind of all over the place. Some of them went up and were actually taken over by a group of Mescalero Apaches in Arizona. The men were killed, but the women were taken to be wives for the Apache warriors, and they converted that group of the Mescalero to the Asagai and taught the teachings to them, and so they actually became a part of it there. And you find it all over the world. If you go into the North Atlas Mountains, that's where you found there were 12 tribes of Berbers, as they were called at the time, and then they split after the flood, and 11 of the tribes left, and they built some ocean-going catamaran. They went down around the end of South America and up through the islands, and they became the Kahuna. And so, you find us all over the world.
Huh.
And so that's why we say that we all began at one source, and that source is Mu.
Yeah. And when they left, didn't they carry some of the dirt with them, the red soil?
I've been told that they did. I haven't found anyone who can actually verify that for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certain the Kahunas still know, but they're pretty close-mouthed about stuff.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means
Russian
the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the reason why she asked that is that L. Taylor Hansen wrote of, she had with Asa DeLucci, who is the traditional chief of the Chiricahuas, probably back in the late 40s or 50s, and when he saw this box that she had, he just went nuts and says, you know, hey, you know, that belongs to my people. He recognized the symbols on it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And he couldn't talk her out of it, but the next day when she came back, the whole tribe had everything they owned out in the plaza, so she gave it to him. But he asked, you know, what happened to the dirt that was in it, and she said, well, if there was any, you know, the archaeologist probably just dumped it out. He said, well, that... You know, he says it would have contained the red soil from the old red land.
So we don't know, we don't really know where the moo originated from.
No.
Except moo.
The only thing that we know about it is, from our end of things, is that there were people there around 208,000 years ago. They went through about 104,000 cycle and then had a pretty cataclysmic time in their lives, and a lot of the people and stuff as they shifted into the new age. And then there were some people who came to help them, and we see that they came from what's known as the seventh son of the Pleiades, which is, if you look at the Little Dipper, where the handle comes down into what is known as, you know, like the pan. If that star with the handle and the pan connect, there's another star behind that. That is the star that they came from. And then also people came who were known as the Kumaras came from Venus.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And, you know, they were androgynous beings, and they
that's what I was looking for.
The people, and they intermarried with them. And some of the traditions from that still carry on in today's religions, like in the Jewish religion in their Bible. Talks about how the sons of God, had relations with the daughters of men and had children by them.
Uh-huh.
And we see that as just one of the many references in religions all over the world that identify that particular happening.
Uh-huh. In my research now, I found this old story that the red dirt was symbolic of a race that came from Venus to the continent of Mu, and bred with the people there, and then a special race developed from that. And so anyhow, that's all. I was kind of curious to see if you had said knew anything about it, and apparently you did because you brought up
Arjuna.
Okay,
someone who's going to know more about it than me.
Oh, yeah? Who?
Tell me. Number one, Jorge Delgado. If you ever get a chance to get him on your show, he'll be absolutely fantastic. Another man.
Maybe you can send. Maybe you can send me some information of how I can get a hold of him or Blue Otter.
Blue Otter has all that
information. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've sent him a couple of emails. He's in Peru, though. I don't know if he can call for.
To get the truth out of you. Trust me, I can call any place I want.
Jorge comes to the United States fairly regularly to teach. One of his students is a man by the name of Mark Amaru Pinkham. Lives over in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Oh, really?
And
he'll be on the show.
When you see that word Amaru, that's the first initiation in the Peruvian tradition. And anyone who goes through the Peruvian training and has gone through their first initiation have the right to use that word. So Mark Tinkham has been there and done it at the source as close to the source as we can get now.
Uh-huh.
And the Maru is one of the appellations for the Phoenicians.
Yeah.
And Maru or the Mauru, and of course they're identified with North Africa and the Tuareg. Have you ever heard the name Tuareg?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, most likely just named a car after, but that's these mysterious people. I believe they wore blue. And we're a very mysterious people that there's still remnants of that live in North Africa.
Yes, they live just south of the North Atlas Mountains, just south of the Berbers.
I think they're called the People of the Wind or something like that.
Yeah, good reason too.
Fine.
The desert blows pretty hot out there.
Now.
Okay. Yeah, I see on our schedule that we have an interview set up with Mark Pinkham March 28th.
Well, it ought to be just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. He's a serpent of wisdom.
Yeah, so he wrote a book called The Return of the Serpents of Wisdom. And we were really excited about it. We've been teaching in a lot of different places around the country, and people kept asking, well, where can we read about the Asagaha? You know, where can we read about, what you did? And we're like, well, we've never written anything down, although we're taking care of that now. We're doing a 13-book series on the teachings of the Asagaha. And the first one ought to be ready sometime around the end of the summer for distribution. But the fun thing with this is I went to a group of my apprentices in Oklahoma City, and the lady who's the leader of them there, who's an absolutely fascinating individual, came up and she said, I have two books that you have to see. And I said, okay. And within the Asagaha, I'm a member of what's known as the Order of the Red Hand. And our purpose is to maintain ancient esoteric teachings and occult wisdom and pass it on whenever it's safe to do so. And she handed me this one book that was called The Secret of the Andes by a guy named Brother Philip. And one of the articles in it is on the Order of the Red Hand, and I just about fell over. And she said, well, if you really want to have fun, turn it over. So I turned it over, and there was the sun disk that is the symbol of the Sinaha Marg in Peru. And it just tripped me out. So then she hands me the second book that Mark Tinker wrote called The Return of the Surface of Wisdom. And on pages 178 and 179, in just about four paragraphs, was the best description of what we do among the Salagi that I've ever seen written anywhere.
For our listeners, Mark Pinkham's website is www.serpentsofwisdom.com.
Judging by the information in the book, he's got the clearest delineation of Sinaha history throughout the world, from its beginning to the current times.
Now, I see on your site also, and I want to repeat that site, www.nafinc.org. I see that on your site in articles that you find a parallel between Wicca and Cherokee spirituality.
Oh, absolutely. if you, we have two things that kind of give us a parallel on it. Number one, when Wicca was actually brought to this country, this is probably going to irritate a few people who listen to this, but, you know, truth is truth. There was no true Wicca in this country until a man named Gavin Frost brought it here. And he married a lady named Yvonne, and Yvonne Frost is half Irish, half Cherokee. And so she's also gone on and studied in Scotland and Wales, and both of them have studied with the Zauberers, the Massacres of Bavaria. Gavin Frost, the first white man who was awarded the right to wear the saffron robe. You know, just, you know, amazing people. And they set up an organization, you know, the Church of Wicca, which is currently in Hinton, West Virginia. And they were originally in New Bern, North Carolina, and they started what was known as the Cherokee Wicca Coven. And what they did is, because the Native American religions were illegal until August of 1978, you know, it's our own country, but we didn't have religious freedom in it. And what they did is they made it possible for a lot of Cherokees to take the sort of basic training of Wicca and get their little ID card that says that they were a member of it and all. And then they would go and they would do their Cherokee things, and they actually helped us recover some things that had been lost because of the similarities between their religion and ours. And the people like, you know, a group of Native American traders who are known as the Bureau of Indian Affairs would come in trying to force Yonig or white man's law against the Native people. And they would encounter these folks who would then whip out their little ID cards and say, oh, we're members of the Church of Wicca, and in Wicca, everyone follows their own path. And so all they could do was go away, because the Church and School of Wicca was the first recognized, federally recognized 501c3 Wiccan religious organization in this country. Now, the interesting things between the two, if you take a good close look at it, is their gods and goddesses, now they recognize, just as we do, we have what we know as the great being, which we call Yonekwa. And we see that as the father end of creation, the one god. And then we have, you know, Yonekwa's consort, Mona La, Mother Earth. And they see the same thing, but they have all these lesser gods and goddesses that they get into. And if you look at what they do, they're exactly the same as our nature spirits and do the same things.
Okay.
So they're an earth-based religion from Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, who, just for consideration, is where the Picts were.
Uh-huh.
And then they're almost exactly, except, you know, a slight difference in some rituals and stuff, they're almost exactly the same as us, just by different names.
Uh-huh. A major religion.
And the Picts were mostly redheaded.
Well, the Picts were mostly redheaded, and they did some other interesting things, like we have two different religions in the Salagi tribe today. One is, you know, Arasaga, and then the other are the Katuas. And the Katuas actually got started around 1600 years ago when there was a civil war among the Cherokees. We used to have 14 clans, not 7. And it was pretty well divided in the war. 7 fought for the Asagaway, 7 fought for the Katua way. And the Katuas actually came about when a leftover priesthood from the Mayans, a group of Mayans had come up after they were slaughtered by the other tribes in the area for their evil practices, had come up through Florida and stuff, and finally gotten run up into the Smokies and settled there where a bunch of the Asuka were. And there was also a group of Navajo, Apache, and Hopi who wound up coming across when they tried to make peace. The only time those two tribes ever cooperated was to run them out and go back to their war. and they came over and settled there also, and over the next couple of generations, the kids all kind of played together and became the Salaji people. And out of that, we had 14 clans. So,
and by the way, that's been publicly confirmed a couple 3 years ago by the Hastings Shade, the Cherokee Nation.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, Hastings Shade was probably the only thing that was good about the last administration in the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma.
John Redhat was able to talk Chad Smith into making the announcement to quit calling on Carter Cherokee's wannabes. And basically, he just told Chad, you know, we don't have so many enemies that we can turn away our friends.
Yeah, well, Chad kind of had a little problem because one of his close supporters in his first election was a Cherokee artist named Merv Jacob, who's without a doubt the finest Cherokee folk artist alive today. And he's in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, and just does wonderful things. But the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma actually went after Merv at one point, trying to keep him from being able to say that that he was a Cherokee artist, because he's from Kentucky, and they were the first ones that actually took U.S. citizenship in the colonial times and stuff, and gave up their tribal citizenship in the process, bringing peace amongst the Cherokees and the white man in Kentucky. So,
and which group was that?
I don't know exactly which group was. There's Cherokees in Kentucky. If you want to know it,
I'm in the Cutaways.
There are black
Cutaways and some factions in Kentucky.
Now, your goal is now, as I'm trying to understand, is to preserve and revive Cherokee shamanism in the Cherokee medicine way. Am I right?
Right. Yeah.
Would you like to explain how you're going about doing that and what you want to, any information that you would like to give about that?
Well, there are several things that we do. We teach anybody who wants to learn the Asagai's way of things, with the Asagai literally all over the world. And we occasionally have problems, like we've had problems from the American Indian movement in the past about teaching people who were not native and things of that nature. But, our deal is if we don't teach everyone about taking care of our Mother Earth, then when she dies and all of us with her one of these days, then we're just as much responsible for it as anyone who polluted her.
Mm-hmm.
So we make it a point to teach virtually anyone who wants to learn and comes to us in a good way. And what we mean by a good way is that they come with a good heart, with a good intention. They're not interested in using the teachings to harm other people.
Right.
And, they're not interested in cursing people and all that sort of thing. We teach people about spiritual law. We share with them the laws of the Siddha. There are 28 of them. They're very detailed, and they help people, work through their daily life. But they do it in such a way that it makes the people be free.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't tie them down with, you can't do this and you can't do that. And it's not what we would call a religion set in stone, in that we have within the Asagai, we have what's known as the Dragonheart Council. And about every 3,000 years, they review the laws of the Siddha and make any changes that are needed, which are usually just a very few here and there. And they just make whatever changes are needed for the laws to still be applicable to people in that day and time.
Uh-huh.
And so it's not a law that's, written on a couple of pieces of stone that can't change, and you're just stuck with it.
And apparently you teach also how to use the proper herbs.
Yes, we do. We teach virtually everything in the process of the Atawahi. So if someone wants to learn about divination, we'll teach it to them. If they want to learn about using herbs and stuff, we'll teach it to them. We have a real good time with it along the way. My grandmother, who is the one who first taught me, began teaching me when I was around 5, and her first husband, who had passed on at the time, was a rather amazing man. He had a photographic memory, and he went to the University of Texas Library And before he was 30, he was a medical doctor, a civil engineer, and an archaeologist. We're wild.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, this is Will Blueauer speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
I haven't come close to matching his efforts so far, but he was interesting. So he would introduce my grandmother to people as his personal witch doctor. And she would introduce him to people as her personal murder doctor.
You are what they call an Ottawehee, right? Now, would you explain to the listeners what that is?
An Ottawehee is a spiritual leader, a holy person who does not only the spiritual work, like, we do things like what's called, for want of a better term today, soul retrieval. The psychologists have this term called dissociation, where they know that people lose parts of their souls. And we see that there are four souls in the body. There's the hepatic soul that's in the bones, or the osseous soul that's in the bones. The hepatic soul is the liver. Then you have the higher soul, which is up around the head and down into the head and heart area. And you have the fleshy soul that's in the blood and radiates out into the tissues. And all of this together makes up what's known as a person's aura. And they can lose pieces of this energy along the way through various traumatic events and stuff. And so whereas the psychologists can recognize that this has happened, they really don't know how to get it back. A change in that has been what's known as transpersonal psychology, and some of them are getting pretty good at helping people recover what they've lost. And it's kind of the spiritual side of things that psychologists have avoided in the past. We do the process of getting that back. We do a process called soul weaving, where we will kind of sort out the things that have gotten messed up in a person's energy to where they can function again. We help people get what's known as a guardian animal, an animal spirit that's usually been with them for a number of different lifetimes. And we help them identify that animal and learn to work with it. We help them hook up with what we know as an upper realm teacher, and that we see the spirit realm as being a circular thing, not like stacked, kind of like the Christian or Jewish version of like with hell at the bottom and heaven at the top stuff. We see it as being the middle realm, which is the spirit realm that's around us where we are right now in this physical life. And if you go high enough into the middle realm, you wind up in the upper realm, which is where you get this upper realm teacher, which is usually a human form spirit that has completed the times, the lifetimes that they needed in this world to learn their lessons, and now, before they can go on to other things, they have to share what they learned to someone who's here. And then if you go high enough in the upper realm, being as how it's circular, you wind up in the lower realm, which is the realm of the nature spirits. And so we work with people in all these different realms, and we get we help them hook up with the spirits that are.
Well, now how would you you said that people lose parts of their souls.
Yeah.
How how do you find those souls again, or pieces, and put them back together to read them?
Is we have about a 7 to 10 year training period for people who work in this sort of thing, and we help them learn the spirit realm as much as they possibly can about the various dangers that are there. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, the spirit world is so wonderful, and they think that someone who's died and gone on has all of a sudden become greater and brighter and smarter and more wonderful than they were here, and there's just all this spooky good stuff out there. And unfortunately, there are a lot of things in the spirit realm that really aren't so nice. You know, it's kind of like if you go back, a lot of things have been invested with energy along the way, like Satanaku, from Sarkhan.
Yeah.
Satanaku, after spending some time, you know, putting his bit of evil out in the world, realized he'd made a mistake and recanted it and went back to the Siddha and served for around 20 years as a Siddha priest, and was finally captured by some of his former followers and was sacrificed. And his name lives on today in the infamy that people tend to remember the bad about people and not the good, and is known as Satan. Where that came from.
Uh-huh.
And so now you have all of this energy that lots of people, both Christians and you know, some Muslims and Satanists, have invested in this figure of Satan, and it's taken on an energy and a life of its own. And that dark energy is running around in the spirit realm. And there really are princes of darkness. They work with an organization in the spirit world known as the Dark Arts. And even though there's something that we often have to combat in the spirit realm and sometimes in the physical life as well, then it's also something that we kind of have to be a little bit grateful for. It's kind of a paradox, because in any ancient tradition that you take a look at, you will eventually find something like, for instance, I believe it's in the 64th chapter of Isaiah in the Jewish Bible, talking about, you know, quoting the Creator as saying, I created all things, both peace and evil. And it's those things, those dark things in the spirit realm, that actually give us the ability to have free will, to have a choice. And so, you know, we teach people about the theology of all of that. And then after they've learned their way around the spirit realm, then we teach them how to hook up with their guardian animal and the guardian animal of the person that they're working for, and then they go and find all those pieces and bring them back.
Now, how do they find their guardian animal?
Well, there are...
See, I know what my listeners are going to be asking, so I just do it for them. That way I don't have to deal with it later.
There are a number of different ways to do it. One way you can do it is go on a vision quest and the animal will come to you. I think that's probably the more dangerous way, in that it's a whole lot better to have that guardian animal before you go in something like that. And there are some people in the New Age movement, we call them the gospel wing butterflies. You know, they kind of flit around from fad to fad here and there. And every once in a while, they get off on a Native American kick and decide they're going to go on a vision quest and something like that. And if you don't have someone who knows physically to hold your power for you, then you're in a dangerous place. Because as you go through the fasting and all this sort of stuff, and all these spirits start coming to you, if you don't have someone there to let the good through and keep the bad from you, unless that bad is to be a part of your vision quest, then you can get in trouble. You can get killed. And so the best way to find a guardian animal is not to do something drastic like that, but simply to get someone who's willing to drum for you very steadily at about 120 beats a minute, which is about, you know, 2 beats a second, for 7 minutes. And in the process, then we have the people lay down in what's in a posture that has been used all over the world for thousands of years for this purpose, and that they'll lay on their back with their legs straight, their right arm down by their side, and their left arm over their eyes. And this is a trance position that automatically sets you up for the journey you need to take. And what we have them do is, you know, pick a hole somewhere. Like when I did it with my grandmother, I was a little kid, and there was a tree in town that was called a bur. 7 feet tall and has these really big acorns. And I just love to take those acorns and just nail my brother and cousin with them and run away. And but up in this tree, there was this hole where this little owl lived. And I always wanted to see what was like in there. And so my grandmother told me, now, when you go on your journey, go up into that hole with the owl and then go down through the root of the tree. And when it gets down a ways, it'll come out and you'll see this, you know, like this little light at the end of the tunnel. And when you come out of it, you'll be in the realm of the nature spirits. And then she told me, don't worry, if you're up in the air, your spirit can fly, your body will be here, it'll be nice and safe, and you'll know everything that's going on with it anyway. So nothing can happen to you. And she said, if you wind up underwater, it's okay. You can swim and do anything you need to, but your body's breathing for you, and you don't need to breathe there. Or you might be walking around in the forest or on the plains, in the desert, or on the beach. You know, but wherever you are, what you do is you look, and you'll start to see animals that will be coming and showing themselves to you. And what you look for is the animal that's going to come to you four times, the one that does it first. And so when that animal comes and shows itself to you four times, it doesn't matter how it does it. It might make a sound that you recognize. You might see it. You might see a silhouette of it. You might just see the whole thing. You might see a piece of it. You might see it doing different things. And so, but when you see that animal four times, then just as a matter of courtesy, you ask it if it's willing to be your guardian. And, of course, it will. And you take its spirit to yourself, and it will tell you its name. It will tell you if you should be allowed to share that name with anyone. Sometimes they don't want you to. Mine didn't want me to for years. And that, you know, and you also find out its sex and all this stuff, because these things are important for you to know how to work with it. And said, and when you're going through that hole where that owl is, don't hang around. We have work to do. So she knew what I was going to do. And I did. I kind of hung around, and she whacked me on the bottom of the foot with mallet she was beating on the drum with, and I was back in my body in a hurry, and she talked to me about it, and we did it again, and it worked just fine. At the end of the 7 minutes, she did what was called a callback, which, our most sacred numbers are 4 and 7. For many, many reasons, but she did, you know, 4 sets of 7 beats, which is a little space in between, a long set of 28, which, you know, 4 times 7, and then another set of 4 sets of 7 beats. And at the end of that time, I was supposed to be back in my body. And any time I was messing around somewhere, then she just reached down and flattened me with that drum beat, and I was back in my body.
Huh.
And it was a whole lot nicer to come back slowly instead of doing it abruptly when she surprised me. So I learned pretty quick to
show. And so basically it only takes 7 minutes?
7 minutes.
Hmm.
Now sometimes we'll have people that have problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they might need to do it again. Usually they're not just allowing the process to go. It's like they can pick any hole they want. It doesn't have to be a hole in a tree. It can be a cave. It can be some rabbit burrow. It can be a volcanic vent in the bottom of the ocean. You know, it can be anything you want it to be. Just hole.
Uh-huh.
It can go. And some people will say, well, I don't visualize things real well. And so they try to make visualize it. And what I'll do is I'll ask them to see in their mind, you know, their favorite, you know, describe their favorite meal to me. And they do, and it's like, no, it's a steak and baked potato or whatever. And okay, and you can see that like you're about to eat it right now? Yeah. Well, that's all visualizing is. And still there are some people who can't do that. But they're real auditory. They can hear things and stuff. So they're gonna wind up hearing their animal. They're still gonna go through the process, at least as far as the feeling and the sound and all that stuff, and they're going to be able to do that. And then there are others who just feel it. They intuit it. They'll intuit the animal coming to them, but it'll still come to them four times. And people have to be a little bit careful in this, and that very often they will try and determine what it's going to be. Like there was a lady in the Sealy, Texas that I was doing this a little while back, and she said, oh, you know, I know exactly what it is. It's a red fox. And it's like, and how do you know this? She said, well, when I'm driving into Houston for my job every day and back, they're always out there watching me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, you know, don't get hung up on that. It might be a red fox and it might not. Just go with the process and see what happens. So she took her journey,
And when she got to the realm of nature spirit, she immediately went to the first red fox she saw, and she said, "Here I am." And I said, "So?" And she said, "You're my guardian animal." And I said, "Oh, no. No, we're not." And she said, "But I see you everywhere I go." I said, "Oh, yeah, we watch you. We don't trust you."
Really?
So she then decided to just go with the process, like she'd been told. And sure enough, she found what she was. It's a Vandy rooster.
Really?
And it's very fitting. She was running, I don't know if she still is, but she was running an office. She was a paralegal. She had 32 other paralegals working under her and 8 attorneys, and she ran them all.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so she was a perfect.
So do you think that people fit their animal spirit, you know, that they... You know what I'm trying to ask you? Yeah.
Say again?
Do you think that people's personalities fit their animal spirit?
Oh, yes. There's a couple that we did this in a place called Sparrow Hawk Village just outside of Tahlequah. And they, both husband and wife, got the same thing. They were squirrels. Mm-hmm. Gray squirrels. And squirrels go through this process that... they'll gather stuff for a while and prepare for the future. They'll have their babies and work with them and stuff. They'll play for a while and they'll rest for a while. And they have those same 4 cycles over and over again. These people were retired, and you could look back at their lives and see those exact same cycles over and over and over again.
Now, these animal spirits, are they always around you, working with you, even though you don't realize it? Or do you have to accept them
for... For the most part, they stay with you all the time. They're really trying to help you do everything they can to get your attention so that they can do their thing. What their purpose is that they're there to protect you, to guide you, and to teach you. But you have to be able to talk with them to be taught. So they really want to be recognized.
And how do you talk to them?
Unless you talk with them through your mind. Animals are, you know, all animals, whether, you know, if you want, you have a cat or a dog?
Yeah, I have a dog.
Okay.
And birds.
If you want to talk with your dog, a real good way to do it is just send some energy out from your heart to their heart, just very gently, and greet them in love, and make a picture of what it is you want to ask and put some emotion with it. And they'll respond so fast, it'll surprise you.
Yes, but I'm talking about your spirit.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Animals in the spirit world still work with the same thing, with picture and emotion.
Oh, okay. All righty. So, makes sense. Now, and then once you go further on your journey, now that you have found your spirit animal, then you find what, the spirit guide, would you call it?
We'll get them... to come back to their body, and we'll get them to work with that animal for a while. We'll get them to do something to honor the animal, like my animal's wolf, and I have a picture by a gentleman that lives over around Hominy, Oklahoma, named Chautelus, and he painted this wonderful picture of the wolf and gives a definition of it, and I've got little statues of wolves around and clothing with wolves on it. And I do things to preserve the wolves and improve their habitats, and have a wolf that some friends of mine let me place on their ranch over in Texas, and do things to further their culture and their life in this world. And after they get into working with the animals and getting into their spirit and stuff, then we get them to dance their animal, study the way it moves and stuff, and dance the animal, and allow that spirit to dance through them, to feel that physical movement again, and they feel the animal real well. And only after they've gotten to where they can do this process, then we'll take them on to find an upper realm teacher.
Okay, so
a human form teacher.
Okay, so when you find your animal guide, then what you want to do is become that animal, so that you can understand it.
Right.
To become one with it.
On a way to use apprenticeship, and one of the things that we work on, too, is getting them to the point where they can see through the eyes of their animal.
Uh-huh. And then after that, start giving it some sort of honor of sorts.
Right.
Like how you do with your little statues and that.
Right.
that this is a form of giving it
honor in any way we can.
Okay, so then after that, then we go on to the next step of what?
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfast and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why.
Finding their upper realm teacher.
Uh-huh.
And the upper realm is kind of an interesting place to get into. Whether you go down through the lower realm, where you're going into the upper realm, or you go through the middle realm into the upper realm, when you get there, it's like you run into sort of like a membrane, or there's real density in the air. You can't really see it, but you kind of run into it, and it's kind of a spongy feeling.
Yeah, I've encountered it once before.
And you know, we'll work our way through it. You can do it any number of ways. I just get my guardian, Osmodian's name, get Osmodian to make a way through for me, and on we go. And then when you're doing this process, though, as you go through, you look for a thing that's known as a Goldman stone, which is like two stones standing upright together with a space in between and another one capped on top. And you'll be in some kind of terrain when you get there and you see this thing. You might be in the desert, you might be in the forest or the mountains or whatever. And there'll be kind of a hazy energy in the doorway. And when you go through that doorway, then you wind up in a different type of terrain altogether. You know, you might be in the Arctic, or you might be on an island or something. You never can tell what it's going to be, but you get through and you start looking. And sometimes there'll be a path that'll show you the way, you know, maybe a little energy glowing or something. There'll be a path that shows you where to go. Or you'll see someone in the distance, and they'll be in a human form. They may be dressed, they may be not, they may be male or female, you never can tell. But when you get there, you're going to know who they are, because number one, they're going to be smiling at you if they're the one that's supposed to work with you. And number two, they're going to have a hide or a blanket or something at their feet, and they're going to have either 4 or 7 gifts on that blanket or hide that are for you. For example, we had a...
Could they give you like 4, could the gifts be visions?
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes the gifts are things in the spirit realm, and sometimes they're physical things.
Because when I met mine, that's what was given to me, was the visions.
Yeah.
Okay.
You bet. And, you know, that vision might carry you through your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it might be a vision in that you're able to see things in the spirit realm that maybe other people don't see.
Uh-huh.
You know, you never can tell what it's going to be. It might be something like that. It might be something physical. You know, a good example is we had a lady in Tulsa that we took through this process. And one of the things that she saw, most of the stuff that she saw, she either already had, or were things that were spiritual gifts. But there was one, there was this ceremonial pipe.
Uh-huh.
And it was absolutely beautiful, and she was rather on the poor side and didn't have a lot of money.
and just knew that if she had to buy this thing, she was never going to get it.
Uh-huh.
And a friend of hers asked her to go over to Sand Springs, which is a little town next to Tulsa, one day. And they were walking around, and there's this this jewelry store down there that this Native American runs, and he makes just some of the most beautiful things you ever saw in your life. And they were walking by the store, and there was that pipe in the window.
Uh-huh.
And she was freaked out, and her friend was there at the same time that she found her upper room teacher and knew about it. And she said, well, just go in and ask him. Just find out about it. I mean, you have nothing to lose by trying. And so Karen went in and found, and the owner came out, and she said, I need to ask you about that pipe in the window. He said, oh, it's not for sale. And she started to turn and leave, being kind of dejected and sad. And he said, why do you ask? And so she told him. And he got this big grin on his face, and he went over and he pulled it out of the window and presented it to her in the traditional way and said, the spirits told me that someone was going to be coming for it and not to sell it.
Oh, really?
It comes to you one way or another.
See, like with me, when I was given like a vision, well, mine was like a vision with three things in it, so I don't know if that would count or not. So it's like one was like, I never could figure it out. It was one was it showed swirling clouds going upwards, and then the second one was a golden arrow with the message, golden arrow straight and true. And then the third was a white elephant running. I don't know. And then it just said that I'd know when the time came.
Well, see, it doesn't matter that there were three things for you. It's just four and seven for the oxygen.
Uh-huh. Well, I believe there was one more, but it's been so long that I can't remember, you know.
And if you need to remember, the spirits will bring it back to you.
Yeah, I should concentrate again on that. It's been a long time. Of course, I went through mine with hypnosis, you know.
Well, that is a valid way to do it.
Yeah. And, okay, so once that spirit, you've done your spirit animal, then your spirit guide, and then they will teach you how, themselves, they teach you how to repair your soul, your spirit. Because every piece is missing.
We work with these spirits to find the parts of people that are missing and bring them back. But basically, you know, after those pieces are back, it'll take anywhere from two weeks to about 6 months, and they'll remember everything from how they lost them. It might be it'll come to them in a dream or just some little thought passing their head. It might be something big that changes their life. You never can tell.
Uh-huh.
But that's pretty much, you know, the process there. What happens with your guardian and your upper realm teacher is that your guardian is there, as I said before, to empower you and protect you and to teach you. And then your upper realm teacher is there to teach you. And we encourage people to do a little process called night school, in that when you've gotten past your initial sleep where your body's been repairing itself and stuff, and you go into your deep sleep, then you can instruct your higher self, the higher part of your spirit, that doesn't reside totally in your body, to go to night school, and it will go to the spirits and they will teach you.
Huh.
And so sometime along the way, then maybe something comes up and someone needs to know how to do something, or someone will ask a question, and all of a sudden this answer just pops out, and it's like, well, where did that come from?
Huh.
And it works.
Now, do you do the instruction before you fall asleep to yourself, to your higher self?
I instructed my spirit a long time ago to go to night school at every opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. Now, I do have some other things that interfere with that, in that I have apprentices and people who depend on me for spiritual guidance. And if they call upon my higher self in the middle of the night or something when I'm asleep, then I'm going and working with them.
Oh.
And I'll deal with night school some other time.
Uh-huh.
But when people are first getting into it, they can ask to go to night school, and they'll be there every night. You know, 2 or 3 hours every night. And 2 or 3 hours in the spirit realm is like, about 3 years here.
Yeah. And you've been doing this since your grandmother taught you, since you were 5 years old?
Right.
Oh, what a fortunate person you were to have such a wonderful grandmother that took the time with you. I think that that's something that is so lost, and what really needs to be brought back into our culture is family and believing once again in the magic of life. People don't believe in imagination anymore. Everything is too materialistic. It's like with psychics. I know that a lot of psychics are better than most people for the reason that many of them were taught when they were children from their mother or their grandmother or whatever. And so they were taught, they were brought up to believe in their dreams, believe in their feelings, their emotions, where most of us were taught not to pay attention to those emotions, those feelings, the instincts.
Well, my father was a Baptist minister, and my mother had a master's in Christian education, so they did their best to get it out of me, and they still try from time to time, but, the traditions won out.
Oh, that's good. I think it's going to be good for all of us. Especially, we have listeners all over the world here at the UFO, and we're definitely going to get this out. And so, you'll be able to touch on a lot of souls tonight, and not only tonight, but for many nights to come, because we run our shows an awful lot through Pioneer in London, England, and then as well as having it on our sites.
Yeah, 24-hour Sundays.
Yeah, we have Native American Sundays as well, and that runs 24 hours a day.
That's neat.
Yeah. I think we're one of the only stations that really do this, for the Native American.
That's the only one
I've
heard of.
Yeah.
Well, Cliff, I really am glad that the spirit... what happened, how I found you, was that, Grandfather Rolling Thunder had always taught about the Asagat. So every once in a while, I put search terms in Asagat and Cherokee and came up with your site. I don't know how long you had it up, but probably not more than 6 months, or maybe a year before I found you, which I guess was, probably 6 months or 9 months ago, something like that.
Well, actually, we've had a website up since 1997, but haven't been able to do a whole lot with it because I didn't know how to do anything with a computer and really didn't have anyone to help me with it.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got married to my present wife.
Now, this is your time, and I want you to use it wisely to get your message out there. What you need, what you feel that the Spirit wants you to say, that's what I want for you to do now.
Well, thank you for that opportunity. In the Asagat, we have just said about, since the Civil War among the Salagi, that since we had a dual regency again, and we revived that process when I was placed in my current position as the general the dragon priest for the Asagat, and we got a female counterpart to work with me at that time. And so we were working on reviving that process in the world. There are many tribes all over, not just in this country or this continent even, but in other parts of the world that were matriarchal too. And there's some people who don't understand sometimes what it means to say matriarchal versus patriarchal. Patriarchal government is what we have in most of the world right now. Like we have in this country, we have a male president. We have a male vice president. We have, mostly male politicians, mostly male governors and stuff like that. That is a typical patriarchal culture. And another thing that's typical about it is that, in most of the religions of the world, you have men who are running everything. And whether it's the Pope, the Dalai Lama, or
the heads of the Cthulhu societies are the Lakota and Dakota and Dakota and Cheyenne religions, Teton and so forth. These all have men who run them, and they don't have women who are in an equal position. Well, in a matriarchal culture, for instance, if we go down to the home, let's take my home for an example. I'm responsible for everything coming from outside the home in. My wife is responsible for everything running in the home. In fact, if you look at the deed for our house, her name is the only name on it. And that is for a reason. The man in a matriarchal culture marries into the woman's family. Like, when I married my wife, she was living in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I was living in a little town called Moody's, just north of Tahlequah. And in Moody's, we had about 127 people, counting our dogs and cats and stuff. And I moved into a neighborhood down in Baton Rouge where there were about 10 times as many people in that neighborhood as there were in Moody's. So it was kind of a culture shock. But the thing was, as a man, as a traditional Asagai man, I moved to my wife. And we do that because the children are born into the mother's clan. And they have to be provided for. And that's why the home belongs to the wife. The things that a man owns are his clothing, his weapons, because among the Salagi, everyone is a warrior first, and then anything else comes along. But so we have our clothing, our weapons, and the things from our trade that we work with and stuff. And that's our property. And if it comes to ending the marriage, we have a thing called a marriage dick. And if the guy comes home sometime and his stuff's piled out on the front porch and his piece of the marriage dick's on top, it's over. And he goes back to his mother's clan. So that kind of freaks out some men when they hear it, and especially it's been interesting that it freaks out a lot of Cherokee men. They don't like that idea.
Well, the Cherokee, I'm surprised that it freaks out the Cherokee.
Well, our culture was basically over by 1880. It just was. It was, we were whited, Christianized, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, there's a term that you run into among the Salagi or Cherokee a lot, Yonig. Yoniga being the word for English, and then Yonig basically is anything that's the white man's way. And one of the things that's gotten pretty bad over the years is that in Cherokee politics, they've often been classed as out-Yoniging the Yonigs.
Oh, yeah.
You see some bad stuff in politics in Washington. Well, go around some of the Cherokee nations and see the politics that goes on, and it's ugly.
Really?
It's that same thing. And there's you hear a lot of stuff along the way, too, also about Native people, singing to put down whites and all this sort of thing. Well, white people, per se, are not bad people, okay? But there was an attitude that was brought over from Europe at the time when people were first invading our country. And that's the attitude that we talk about when we talk about white this and white that and white the other thing. So for the people who are listening to this, don't think that we're putting you down. We're not. Because there are a lot of people today who are more native than the natives. For example,
bless you for saying that. I think that a lot of people appreciate hearing that.
On maintaining, our position as earthkeepers, the protectors of the earth. But there, I used to go to a powwow, an absolutely magnificent powwow conducted every year in Oklahoma City called Red Earth. And I say I used to go to it because I would go inside and there were all these wonderful people doing these wonderful things. But you'd go outside and there'd be a whole bunch of Native young men who didn't have enough money to get a motel room, but they could afford about 5 cases of beer a day. And they'd stand out there and drink their beer and crush the cans and throw it in the street and yell, "It's our earth, and we can do what we want to with it." And I finally had to stop going because every year I'd wind up getting in their face and telling them, "You know something? I think you're reincarnated from Custer's 7th Cavalry."
Yeah.
The light was on.
Yeah.
So I don't go anymore. But, that was just the thing. It's an attitude that now lots of Native people have taken on, and it's the white people and the black people and the Oriental people and stuff who are running around learning our traditions and mixing them with their own and becoming the earth keepers.
Well, that was prophesied.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Yes, well, someone told me that as far as being Indian, it's not, you have to be, you have to be of the spirit, not. Well, you can't be born an Indian. How does that work? How am I trying to say that? Indian is not being born Indian. It's being Indian.
Yes, we see that like people. Native people, and then there are apples.
It's kind of like the concept.
A person is red in their heart. An apple is red on the outside, and, well, that white attitude on the inside.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Jesus was trying to teach. He said to enter the kingdom, you have to be born again. In other words, you got to completely change your attitude and come back around to, a good, wholesome attitude about
that.
Well, that's certainly part of it.
Well, I think that the idea that you're trying, as far as the measure goes, it makes sense to me because a woman does need the home to take care of the family if she has children,
they're still involved in business and all that sort of thing. And to get back to that, if you go beyond the family, in the village or the town or whatever, you would have a women's council and a men's council. And the men's council would elect a man to be the male regent, and the women's council would elect a woman to be the woman's regent. The woman would run everything in the town, and the man would deal with everything outside the town coming in.
Uh-huh.
And also dependents and that sort of thing. And if the man got out of line, the women's council would fire him. And the men would have to select a new one. If a woman got out of line, the men would fire her, and the women would have to select a new one. You take it beyond that, you took it like today, if you went to a state, there would be a male and a female governor. And like the legislature here in New Mexico, there would be a male legislature and a female legislature. And the governor for the women would be chosen by the women's legislature, and the men's governor would be chosen by the men's legislature. If you went on beyond that to the federal level, then there would be two presidents, a male who, God forbid, George Bush, ran everything outside the country, and then there would be a woman who would run everything inside the country, and there would be two vice presidents.
I think Laura Bush would be great for doing that. She seems like a sweetheart.
So that would be the way it would work if you went to England. They'd have two parliaments. In the House of Lords, they would have House of Lords, the House of Ladies, and the House of Commons. They would have one for men, one for women.
Well,
two prime ministers. The whole bit.
It seems to me like maybe that would, as far as the future goes. I mean, it's not something that's going to happen overnight, but I wouldn't doubt that because it's a very definite working system, and I wouldn't doubt that, you know, in the new age that is coming, that we might see that eventually.
Yeah, and we're actually working on getting that to happen a little faster.
Oh, good.
We're wanting to start another civil rights movement in this country for women. Because, let's see, in 1979, the Equal Rights Amendment was passed to give women the same rights as men. And it had to be ratified by the states. It was one state short, so the ERA never passed.
Yeah.
And then they came up with affirmative action to try and equal it out for them and a number of other people. And that worked pretty well for a while. And then G.W. Sharp got the presidency. I won't bother to say how I think he got it. But when he got in the White House, one of the first things he did is he got rid of federal affirmative action, which puts ladies back to where they were legally before 1979.
Yeah.
And it's not good.
No, it's not.
Now, for the first time in history, we have more men in the world than women in known history.
Yeah.
And so that puts us in a kind of a dangerous position. Either we can have a real good change, or it can get ugly and women could wind up being a commodity. And I hate to say that to you, Mary, but that's out there as a possibility.
Yeah.
So what we're interested in doing is getting a civil rights movement going for women, all races, all tribes, it doesn't matter. And getting to where women have exactly the same rights as men do. Now, of course, that means having the same responsibilities in a lot of ways, too, socially and otherwise, whether it's military service or any other thing. But one of the things we're interested in doing is having a very visual display of the differences. For example, I was up in a place called Rochester Commons in Michigan a while back, doing a little teaching, and we'd gone to lunch, we were in this little restaurant. Well, Rochester Commons is a pretty neat little town, and its downtown area is about 5 blocks long, and down in the middle of it is their little city hall and police station and all this stuff. And it's such a quiet little town. There are these two officers that were sitting out there and just minding their own business and talking and having a good time. They didn't have anybody to harass, you know. Nobody was doing anything wrong. So we were in the restaurant, and this lady was getting all up in arms and saying, "I've never been as free as you are." I said, "Oh, really? Okay. I'll tell you what. Come outside, and we'll have a little demonstration to prove it." And so our little group went outside, and a number of other people who'd been listening in our conversation went out, too. And I took my shirt off.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Okay, Marlo, take your shirt off." And she got this just stricken look on her face, and there was just no way she was going to do it, and her arms were across her chest and all. I said, "You're as free as me. Take your shirt off, and you and I are going to walk down past those two police officers and see what happens." And there was just no way she was doing that. So we went down there anyway, and I didn't have my shirt on. And I asked these two officers, I said, "Excuse me, but is there any problem me walking around without my shirt on here?" And one of them said, "Well, no, but it's kind of cold." It was. And so I said, "Well, okay, that's great. Well, how about Marlo here? How about if she walks around without her shirt on?" And one of them looked her up and down, and I'm certain you've seen the look before, and he said, "That'll be fine with me. I'll be the one to arrest her, and I'll be the one to frisk her."
Yeah.
Okay. We went back to the restaurant, and Marlo still had her arms tied across her chest. So what we're interested in doing is getting this same little scenario to take place, only in a different way. Let the media know that there's going to be a protest against the way women are treated differently in this country. And what we would like to see is 1,000 men and 1,000 women, every other one, man, woman, man, woman, man, woman, across the steps of the U.S. Capitol. And we all get down and we take quick cuffs and we hook our legs together. And then we all take our shirts off and sit down. Now, this will be a very visual event. Lots of media will come.
You don't want them to burn their bras. You want them to burn their blouses, too.
everything. You know, so then what will happen is the people with the media are out with their cameras and stuff, and the cops are there, and the police go to arrest these people who are indecently exposed. The only ones who are indecently exposed are the women. And they're not indecently exposed.
And they ought to all be holding copies of National Geographic magazine open when they're doing it.
Yeah, and they're all holding on to their copy of the Right to Privacy by the American Civil Liberties Union and other organizations that fight for the right to privacy. You know, privacy is not just people not listening in on you in your home, on your telephone or your computer, or seeing what you read at the library. Privacy is also how you wear your hair, where you go to church, what you wear, you know, the whole bit. So, you know, we do this, and if the police go to arrest the women who don't have their shirts on, but they're not going to arrest the men who don't have their shirts on, this is going to tell people something right up front.
True. And when is this? Do you know when this is going to be taking place yet? Or?
Well, we're hoping to be able to pull this off in 2006. Right now, we need volunteers that we can notify at the time when we're ready to do it. And if anyone wants to, then they can get on my website and get the email and send it. You know, send us their name and.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome to use the UFO anytime you wish to promote your ideas. Okay.
Well, I know there's a whole bunch of Milton nudists out there that love to help you.
Yeah, I remember the Nature Society.
Yeah,
quite a few of them.
You know, though, unfortunately, it seems like right at this point in time, all of our rights, men and women, are being violated. You know, to the point where
the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty much wiped out the Bill of Rights, the Constitution.
Yeah.
That means that George Bush and John Ashcroft, just to name a couple, are domestic enemies of the Constitution. And since we're on the radio and talking to certain people, let's just mention one thing right quick. Every veteran in the United States has taken an oath that says that we will uphold and defend the United States Constitution against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. And according to the Universal Code of Military Justice, that part of the oath is perpetual for the rest of our lives. So, a little challenge to veterans. Our rights are being violated. Let's do something about it.
Well, I'll further that. I challenge the citizens of the United States. We all have an obligation to protect our Constitution.
And yeah, if anyone wants to learn how to do it in a, not necessarily a nice way, but a peaceful way, they can learn about psychological warfare. And a way to do that is on our website. We have three manuals written by a man named General John G. Spector. And Spector worked with CIA's Tactical Anti-Terrorist Force back in the 70s and 80s and basically wrote their manuals on psychological warfare. And after the some of the bureaucrats and people in the FBI who were feeling like they were having some sort of a tough problem decided to shut them down, then he rewrote the manuals for civilian consumption and has donated them for a brief period of time for us to use as a fundraiser for our organization, and they can get them very inexpensively as a set.
And that would be www.nafsinc.org.
Right. And they just go into the marketplace, and I think it's the next and last item listed in there.
Well, and folks, Clifford's not liable to mention this, so I'd like to mention that he is a veteran of the Vietnam era, and he's also just a member of the United States Army Special Forces. Which group?
I was with CIS Group and...
CIS Group, that's all?
No. I was...
Oh, then it wasn't, yeah.
We were attached to Bad Tulse, but we worked in places like Turkey, you know, interdicting Greek Cypriot terrorists coming over, did a lot of stuff in Africa and whatnot, worked at a place called Camp Warden, just outside of Bad Tulse, where we would take regular troops who had no special training and stuff. We'd take clerks, you know, administrative people, finance people, and stuff like that, and teach them mountain warfare. And then also
I'll bet
the 46 Special Forces, which was a psychological operations group, and that worked with the Joint Casualty Resolution Center, and was also working, there was the Escape and Evasion Net for our downed pilots in Cambodia and Laos.
I met a fellow in 83 in Nashville. He trained me in gas leak detection, and he was fresh from group. He did a bad pulse. He said he commanded an A-team. He says they were only operational troops in Europe. One A-team out of bad pulse. And I asked him, I said, what, you got mount troops, yeah. I said, what kind of small arm were you issued? He says, M1 Garand. I said, so I'm not surprised.
No, the M1 Garand was a magnificent weapon.
Yeah, the box magazines for resupply. And, but yeah, he's, that was the real deal.
Yeah, my husband, he's also a Vietnam vet. But, and any other things that you want to bring up?
Well, that's certainly our main concern right now, but if anyone is interested in any form of Native American spirituality and stuff, and they want to be covered in doing so, if they want to write us and show an indication there, then we'll be happy to send them the laws of the Siddha. They can take a look at it. In fact, it'll be published in our first book here very shortly. And they can decide if they want to affiliate with us or not. So one of the things that's been interesting over the years is there are lots of people who use feathers for prayer and for spiritual work and stuff. You can take a feather, for example, like from a hawk or an eagle or, you know, or blackbird or, you know, any of the so-called songbirds and stuff, and you can tie you some string around it and rub your hands together, get your energy flowing, hold that feather in your hands, and put your intent, your prayer, and this kind of needs to be a long-term prayer because feathers last a while, and then hang it out somewhere to blow in the breeze, and the spirits of the air will carry your prayers, and along with the spirits of that animal will carry your prayers to wherever they need to go, as long as that feather lasts. But there are a lot of people who've been persecuted for that sort of thing in this country, saying that they were not involved in Native American spirituality. Well, if they want to have an affiliation with it, then they're welcome to join us.
We have a
Migratory Bird Act, federal funding.
Migratory Bird Act, the Endangered Species Act, also.
We have a website for people writing in, asking for prayers, and then we also have a bunch of people that come together, and I call them our prayer warriors. And we'll use that. We'll use the feathers. I'll add that to our site to let them know how to do that. And then also the people that are on the prayer page, I'll have like a little something in there, you know, to explain how it's done so that they can do it to help their family that they're asking prayer for.
Just to touch on something else, a little bit off the subject of Native America, there are, well, one of the things that my grandmother and others in the Asuka encouraged me to do growing up was to study all of my heritage as far as our ancient tribal religions and stuff, because as they saw it, that along with our Native stuff is what makes up our true medicine. And so we invite anyone to study with the Asuka here, because if you're in this country, or you're from this country, or you're from some place that had this type of earth-based spirituality, then that's part of your medicine. You have a right to it. And when it comes to studying other things from other places, if you're Celtic, well, I would suggest that people check out the Church and School of Wicca in West Virginia. They have a website, I think it's churchandschoolofwicca.org or something like that.
Thank you.
And then there's another organization, there is the Esoteric Theological Seminary. And they have one of the most wonderful programs you'll ever see. They have mystery spiritualities, you know, and traditions from all over the world. And they teach it online. And their website is www.northernway.com. And it's .com or .org, I don't remember right offhand. But either way, it's Northern Way. And when you get that, it'll have the name of a lady named Dr. Katya Romanoff mentioned in there and stuff, and you know you're in the right place. Well, for $25 a month, you can study with these people all you want to and copy their material and everything and learn it. And they have teachers that work with you, and none of their teachers are paid. Really amazing organization.
That's a good opportunity.
Yeah, it's a magnificent opportunity for people. And if they take it and they learn the stuff from their ancient European and African traditions and, you know, and Middle Eastern and all this stuff that these people can provide, and or they do the Celtic bit with the Church of Wicca, you know, and they also do, you know, the native stuff here, whatever tradition they care to choose, then they will have their well-rounded and functional medicine that they can do.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Well, we have a group called Ancient Mysteries MS, and right at this point in time, I think we have 207 members, and I'll make a post in there as well to let them know about it. Of course, I'm sure that every one of them could be listening to the show. They're quite excited about having you on.
Yeah, we'll get a board up at prophecykeepers.com too, if you just send me a little stuff.
Oh, and speaking about that, member or listener, we will have our website on at Burlington News. So it'll be burlingtonnews.net/ let's see, how will it be? www.burlingtonnews.net/ALFORD. And that will be your Dr. Alfred's personal website that will be coming off our Prophecy Keeper website, the Prophecy Keeper Show website at burlingtonnews.net, Prophecy Keeper Show. Oh, no, we thank you. We thank you. And I'll have all your links on there to, you know, your site, as well as the links on there that you brought up tonight about the different places that you would suggest.
Yeah, there's and Prophecy Keepers on ours. So.
Yes, I've seen that. Thank you very much for supporting us. We always appreciate it here.
We'd be crazy not to.
Apparently, I guess we got a few more minutes. So.
Oh, sure.
Vietnam era, did you spend any time in Vietnam?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't think so. I was going to ask if you learned anything from either the Vietnamese or the Laotian Highland people. So I guess you were in Germany at the time then, huh?
Right.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it was, the military was a wonderful experience, but I'm glad it's over.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I'd like to be doing is fighting in a war that we don't belong in.
Yeah. So Mad Bear Anderson said when he went to Saigon, he said, these people look like Iroquois.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was really a problem for a lot of our people over there in that they found themselves fighting against tribal people who simply wanted to be free of colonial influence.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came back pretty messed up with a lot of problems. A lot of Vietnam vets for Native American, you know, are still working on getting over that one. What they should remember is that if your country sends you there, you know, it's like karma might not be exactly a Native American word, but it's part of this culture now and everybody understands it. Well, there is a national karma. And if you're in the military and you're set to fight in an unjust war, it's not your karma.
Yeah.
It's the nation's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you were forced to.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
And anyhow, let's repeat your website here. And we're talking to Dr. Clifford Telford, Ph.D., D.D.
This is Yasa Sago, a seventh-grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
Kind of him, wrong. true.